Welcome to the Great Awakening Show. I am Joanne, Divine Life Yogini, and on this week's show, we have Lori King. Lori King has set up the Wild Wellbeing Workshops, which invite you into more conscious connection with nature and yourself. They combine different wisdom traditions and nature-based practices, including using the ecocentric wheel and threshold crossing. Using these practices, you are guided to formulate intentions for a new season, uncovering any blocks and gifts that may be hidden under the surface. You will be invited to go into the woods to contemplate and receive the messages from nature and from your own instincts to help you embody your intention. The weekend culminates with storytelling and sharing circles, and the insights people gain at these workshops often stay with them throughout the whole season. Lori King is a writer, coach, and guide, encouraging people to transform their relationships through nature connection practices and wild well-being workshops. Her book, Wilder Journeys, is by Watkins Publishing. You can listen to the Great Awakening Show and all 42 UK health radio shows as a podcast on Spotify, Apple and Amazon Music, Alexa, and many more. Links are in the description. UK Health Radio, the world's number one health talk radio and podcast.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Lori, thank you for being on the Great Awakening Show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Joanne.
Absolutely brilliant in this wonderful time that we are living in. So I always ask people, I believe that we are going through a great awakening at this time. And what does this great awakening mean for you? And how do you see it for us all?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So the words great awakening for me suggests a sort of awaking up. And in my own personal journey, that's a kind of a waking up of the consciousness, becoming more conscious to others around me and the natural world around me as well. So I feel that at some points in life we can run on autopilot and we can play out sort of old patterns, but you can really wake up from that if you put your attention on it and become more aware. And that really helps sort of moving out of living in this sort of fog of pre-created behaviours from, like, you know, generations before or childhood or all sorts of things that can play out, and actually going, oh, okay, so these things are happening, but I don't need to be completely consumed by that. And in my own life, that's helped me kind of come into a more of an awake state of just noticing things and also feeling the interconnection with everything and with others as well. So for me personally, that's sort of what it's meant.
Beautiful. And that's so true, because we are all conditioned, you know, we're conditioned from society, from, you know, our parents, from, you know, schools, from everything. And we have to the great awakening, you know, it's an awakening within oneself, you know, isn't it? And for me, that awakening really did, I mean, I've been a yogini for 30 years, but really when I started to embrace nature, that's when my real awakening, because, you know, for me, you know, I coming into nature, it was like a calling. And I felt myself going back, and in nature, it was almost like a healing. She was healing me. The mother was healing me and calling back all those parts of myself that I gave away to people, places and things, you know. So That's the calling. I think this great awakening is us coming back and having that oneness with nature, which we used to have in our ancient times, didn't we? So how do you see that? Yeah.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I used to sort of be in such a fog of thoughts that I don't think I even noticed the seasons changing. And, you know, we're animal beings, and it's part of our inner nature to be able to notice what's happening around us and to kind of feel connected to the plants and the other animals and to, yeah, really feel part of some kind of rhythmical movement of life. And yeah, we can so easily keep our eyes closed to all of that.
Yes. And that's what she does. You know, being in nature, it opens you up, doesn't it? Opens you up to the possibilities and to that communion with, because, you know, I said this to your wonderful friend, Miriam, who's also co-written the book Wilder Journeys with you, that, you know, nature is my church. Nature is spiritual. Nature is the true spirituality, you know, and it's because God is in, the goddess is in everything, isn't it? It's in it and in nature, most of all.
Yes, that's the life force of everything that we're part of.
Beautiful. I love that. And let's go into, please tell us about your amazing book, Wilder Journeys, the stories of, nature, adventure and connection. So tell us all about it. Have you got it there? I've got it here.
Yes.
Great. Let's have a look at the cover. Yeah. Beautiful.
Copy here. Yeah, it's got a really colourful, eye-catching cover. So the Watkins Publishing did a great job with the design. Yeah. So it's kind of what it says on the tin. Wilder Journeys is a collection of true short stories and poems about nature connection and self-transformation. Came about because I just kept meeting really incredible, inspiring, brave people that had stepped out of their comfort zone, living in the wilderness, rowing across oceans, walking the world. And I felt I really wanted to capture some of this wisdom, their understanding of their place in the animal kingdom, and also about how they've personally developed through it all, how they've changed, how they've healed. So yeah, that was where the sort of inspiration for the book came from. And first I approached Roz Savage, who I actually met on a wilderness rite of passage retreat. And I asked her if she was interested in writing a chapter. And she said yes. And I was like, oh, okay, well, this feels like it might be happening. And then I reached out to Angela Maxwell, who has walked across the world, crossing four continents.
Wow.
And covering 32,000 kilometres. Yeah, exactly. And I asked her, and she said yes. And then I asked Miriam, who I think was third. And as you know, Miriam lived in the wilderness for 7 years and has an incredible connection with the natural world that I couldn't really imagine. And I just was like, okay, this is really coming together. And I got on so well with Miriam, and she was so enthusiastic that I asked her to co-edit with me. And that's how it all came together. And between the two of us, we created this book. Yeah. And it includes poems as well, because I write poetry, and I feel that poetry is such a great tool of expressing connection that goes somehow beyond words. Although poems is all words, it captures the essence of something in a different way to prose. So it's a collection of, you know, adventure stories in a way, but with this theme of self-transformation, but also the interconnection of all things and how nature is a mirror and we can learn from it, but also with poetry, which kind of, yeah.
Beautiful. That's so beautiful.
A beautiful, magical element to it.
Yeah, that's really wonderful because, you know, this is the time of coming back. I believe, you know, as we all evolve here, the human race, you know, yes, we will have higher technologies and things, but this is a time where we will come back to the natural world and we will balance that. You know, because we have to, you know, we have to. We can't be like older civilizations that just, you know, extinct themselves because of their technology. It has to have that balance of the natural world. And that's what we're doing. We, you know, coming out of the, we've been at, coming out of the natural world and living in these tiny little boxes, haven't we? Away from each other, away from community, away from tribal living. But so many people are now wanting to buy land and going out and, you know, making their own communities, living off the land, being self-sustainable. So yes, it's a time, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I hear that more and more, that people are longing for a kind of community and nature connection and a feeling of purpose as well. I feel like purpose is a big part of it. Like, we've lost our way as humans, and we're not really sure anymore about, you know, what we're meant to be doing on this planet, like what our original intent was, or what nature connection is, what it means. And so, yeah, I really feel that people are craving this, and there are so many different ways that people go about sort of meeting those needs. But yeah, community living is definitely one of them, as well as other practices to do with nature connection.
Definitely, definitely. And how can we come out of our comfort zones and connect with our wild animal nature within?
Well, I think the first thing to do would be to ask yourself, what is my comfort zone? It's different for everyone, depending on your background and what you've experienced. So the first thing would be saying, what is my comfort zone? And then second thing would be making a list of all the things you would love to do, but that you feel afraid of. I think feeling the call to something is really important. We don't need to push ourselves out of our comfort zones unnecessarily, but if we're feeling a call to like grow and learn, we're sort of intuitive beings, we know what those calls are. I'm thinking of Angela Maxwell, who wrote a chapter in Wilder Journeys, and she just felt, she knew that she needed to walk, and that she'd never done a long distance walk before. She was working in a cafe, and yeah, just like living in the US. And she just thought, hang on, I really feel the call to do this, but I've never done it. It's terrifying. And so she set about researching how to do it, and read loads of books by people that had walked long distance, and started gathering all the equipment, started gathering resources. And then she started, and that's all it takes. But she really felt that pull and that call and that drive. And I think that that's a big part of it. And yes, picking something, you know, we all have a sense of what we need to learn, I think, and yeah, what might serve us.
Beautiful. That's so true. That's so true. And the only way to evolve and change is to move out of our comfort zone. You know, otherwise we stay in that same place and we never evolve. We never learn. And sometimes, you know, the challenge and the contrast, although it might look a bit dark and it might be, you know, very, very difficult, is the thing that makes us grow, is the thing that we have to, it makes us, it's the perseverance of it, never giving in, never giving up, and persevering to overcome that, you know, your fear, your deepest terror, your, you know, to, you know, all these fears is so important, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, facing your fears is one of the most profound experience, isn't it? Saying, hey, okay, this is an edge for me, but I'm going to meet it. I'm going to meet that edge. And then when you come out the other side, you feel completely different in yourself.
Yeah, so beautiful, so beautiful. And please tell us, because this is really exciting to me, all about your wild well-being workshops. This is fantastic. More people need to go out. I mean, you know, with the pandemic, I know that it was really bad, but also I believe, you know, shutting down everything was really wonderful for the earth, but also it gave people like, where am I going to go? Oh, I can only go to the park or the forest. These people probably never even set foot in a park or a forest, you know, but it was the only place to go. So I think it's, yeah. So tell us about your wild well-being workshops.
Okay, yeah. So myself and a colleague, Naomi Wilkinson, run workshops. And this is the very essence of it, to help people connect with nature, including their own deeper nature. So we combine two approaches. One is systemic constellations, It's an amazing tool to help us see ourselves and our processes more clearly. And Naomi is trained in facilitating systemic constellations.
Could you just tell us what that means? Could you tell us what that means? Because I'm not too sure. I've heard of family.
Yeah, sure. It's similar to family constellations. And I'm not the best person actually to tell you about it because she is so eloquent in explaining it. But for me, it's using information from our field of consciousness to help us understand about ourselves, and that involves using different objects or humans in community and circle to represent different parts of our system, and that might be like a family system, but it could also be, you know, places or different objects in nature. And you are as a representative and as the issue holder, you're moved and you feel things as the issue plays out in this kind of ceremonial practice, and you can understand it from a different perspective and on a deeper level.
Beautiful.
So we use this to help set intentions, looking at what, you know, what it is we're really calling to step into our lives, and what are the blocks. And so we gather information through using this practice to help us with our intention setting. So we then send our community out onto the land for 3 hours on a nature solo with their intention. And we create this threshold, which is like a physical kind of circle out of sticks. They step in, they say their intention, and then they step out onto the land for 3 hours.
Beautiful.
During that time, everything we experience is a teacher. The other beings show us things. The emotions that come up, that's also information that can help us with really living and breathing our intention. And then after the nature solo, each individual is invited to come back into circle and tell the story of their time on the land, which is a really powerful process. And then as a guide, we mirror back and reflect back what the important sort of messages and lessons were that we could see from their story. And that's part of our gifts and our offerings, is to be able to take a kind of outside perspective and say, hey, thank you so much for teaching us about this, or I can see that you grew in this way, and, you know, linking it to the intentions. And it's such a powerful thing to have, to receive and also to give, actually. And we do these workshops at the threshold of a new season. So our next one is Summer Swell. It's the 3rd and 4th of June in Stroud. And the one after that is Autumn Well. And that's the 16th and 17th of September. And we set intentions for the new season based on what we're longing for and how we can sort of step into that new season with like more clarity and in support of our personal growth. And I personally find it sets the tone for the season really well. Like, I'm still with my spring intention when I stepped into spring, and it's helped me to stay grounded through these months as they've passed. We work around the seasons because we're seasonal beings in essence.
Yes.
And also because I've been taught the practice of using the medicine wheel.
Is that the ecocentric wheel?
Yeah, so the ecocentric wheel is Bill Plotkin's particular version of the medicine wheel, but the medicine wheel is kind of much older and
the shamanic way of
more widely used. Yeah, exactly. But it's sort of based around the four seasons, the four stages of life, four colours, you know, four different energies. So, yeah, we break the year up into the four chunks and offer one each season.
Beautiful, beautiful. And to me, this means, you know, it is like going on a shamanic quest, yeah, which is a rite of passage. It's an initiation. And all in the indigenous world, which, you know, I don't believe is primitive. I think they're much more civilized than our primitive society, who has lost touch with, you know, the ancient traditions and the ceremonies and the rituals and the ancient wisdom that we all had. You know, this is why we're going back to it. This is Great Awakening. And, you know, it's like beautiful because these young people used to go out on their quest, face their fears, go and challenge in the wild. You know, live in the wild, be at one with Mother Earth and the natural elements. you know, because everyone is just living in the past, or should have done that, should have done this, or living in the future, oh, I should be doing that, I should be. They're not living in the divine moment, which is now, which is here, which is the field of all infinite possibilities.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the rites of passage movements, as you say, started with kind of shamanic practices based in indigenous cultures of North America, and the practices that they used to do with their adolescents to kind of give them a sense of purpose, and like, so they could understand their gifts and really think, how am I going to be of service? And these practices were passed on from indigenous people to Westerners and psychologists, saying like, you guys need to move out of adolescence in your culture. Like, you need these practices. And so there the movement began.
Wow. And it is so important, especially for young people. Look what's happening to our society. Young mental health, young people, they are just going through so much. They've lost themselves. They don't know who they are. You know, all this social conditioning, you know, all of the, you know, gender problems that are happening. It's really, I just feel so sorry for our younger generation. And this is why my daughters, they did cadets. They did, you know, fire cadets, police cadets, you know, and it was so good, because that was almost like, you know, becoming that woman in a man's world, you know, going out and having that. It's very important. And I think these, especially for, you know, younger people, you know, would your wild well-being weekends are very needed at this time to get people back in touch with what is their sole purpose and what has meaning, the true meaning of what this whole life journey is about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm really keen to work more with young people, continuing to do training and, talking with different school providers about including some wilderness rites of passage into that work. But that's a long old journey,
because I know that the Duke of Edinburgh, they do that. My daughters have been on lots of them, and that's really great, because they're trekking through, you know, all these places with no one there, and they've got to do orienteering, and it's, you know, living on the earth and everything, and it's so, they came back different people. You know.
Yeah, to be honest, Duke of Edinburgh was where I started out with all of this. And for me, it was a definite rite of passage and a community building and all of that. And the more sorts of things like that are offered, the better. And I think if we can include also a kind of ceremonial, spiritual connection with the earth, with those sorts of experiences for young people, that will add, you know, the next layer of depth.
You're so right, because that was beautiful, but yes, it's missing the spiritual. We're holistic beings, mind, body, and soul. And we must incorporate that, and bringing that back into the ritual around the fire and setting the intention is so important, because our words are spells, are they not? And, you know, what we're putting out there is, we are creative beings, and it's our thought and it's our feeling. And it's our spoken word that goes out to, you know, come back to us. It's cause and effect, isn't it?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It's also the, you know, the ceremony of coming back to your community after you've been on a sort of rite of passage experience, whether that's a Duke of Edinburgh or gone traveling on your own or whatever it may be. It's being received back as a different person by the community, and them to acknowledge the changes that you've made. And I think that's also often missing, and that's what we kind of learn when we train in wilderness rites of passage practices. It's like, being a guide, you hold space for the individual for when they come back from their rite of passage, and you don't treat them the same anymore as well. Because I think often young people can kind of go out, I mean, any age group can go out, and they have a profound experience, and they come back, and the way they're received is like, you went on that thing and you're just the same as you were before. And you can very easily then slip back into old patterns and habits. But if you're received with sort of an acknowledgement that you have grown, and, you know, a kind of gratitude for the wisdom that you've brought back from your journey. Yeah, that's so important. And I suppose that's also that weaves its way into the World Wellbeing workshops that I run, but also with the World of Journeys book project. You know, I was asking the adventurers, the writers, the contributors to share what wisdom they gained from their trip, because it's such a storytelling is such a powerful thing. And I think, yeah, more stories like this of self-transformation need to be heard and received for us all collectively to grow.
Exactly. Because that's sharing. That is what sharing means, isn't it? And the whole part of the healing is sharing it and speaking our truth. This is what I learned. This is what changed me. This was profound. I had this experience. This is how I felt. And so many young people cannot even do that. They can't relate to their parents. They can't express it anymore. And that's why, unfortunately, they turn to drugs, or they turn to, you know, all this, you know, aggression and things like that, because they don't have that outlet and they don't get praised enough. Even in school, there's never any praise. You know, it's such a, you know, there's not hardly any freedom of expression anymore. You'll just learn basic, you know, old history numbers. And, you know, you're not taught to think outside or think critically for yourself or think about things. You're told what to think, you know, in that way.
Yeah, I think in many ways that's right. But I also have met many young adults recently who are just incredibly switched on and so creative. And I think maybe the sort of feeling of being a bit trapped in the system, and also the kind of the worries about the future of the planet and all sorts of things have really inspired creativity in young adults as well. I mean, obviously there's also an element of, you know, fear and anxiety and depression that comes from that. But I've also seen the other side of it, which is like very switched on young adults who, you know, want to do the best thing and want to grow. And yeah, it's been an
beautiful,
interesting journey.
Beautiful, beautiful. And how can people, because I know that you're into this, right? How can people be more self-sustainable and ecological in their everyday to day lives? Give us some advice for that, you know, because
Well, so I learned foraging, and a key principle of foraging is just to take what you need. And I try and apply that into my life more generally. It's difficult. It's difficult in this society where, you know, consuming is at the kind of core of who we are and what we do, or at least that's what we're told.
Yeah.
But I think if we keep in mind that kind of foraging mindset of I take what I need and leave enough for everyone else, including other non-humans, we can, move towards more sustainable behaviours.
What do you mean by that? Do you mean by like growing your own foods and foraging from the natural world and, you know, sustaining yourself by that? Because, you know, the food in the supermarkets is not food. It's just toxic. You can't even call it food because there's no life force energy in it. You know, we are made of life force, prana, aren't we? So the foods we eat should be alive and made from and fill us up with that life force. But the supermarket is, you know, even the organic is very, very difficult. So, yeah, what do you mean by, you know, foraging, growing your own?
Well, I was actually just applying a mindset more than anything. I'm not saying that we all have to go out foraging necessarily. I was just applying the mindset of taking what you need, like not over consuming, basically. And I think, I would advocate growing own food if it's possible for people, or if they don't have their own land, getting involved in the community growing scheme. Of course, food is fundamental, but I think more than that, it's all the other things that we use, clothes, you know, plastic, all of those things. And I think that in general, we consume a lot more than we need of various things.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key.
Yeah.
Personally, I think that's the key to kind of starting to move towards a different way of being, as to just the simple things in life are beautiful, and to try and simplify life and just cutting back on how much, like being aware, maybe more than anything, it's like what we're consuming, being a conscious consumer.
Yeah, that's beautiful because, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Why can't we grow hemp? I mean, hemp is the fastest growing plant in the world. Yeah. We can make so many things from hemp. We can make clothes. We can make, utensils. We can make so many things, but they don't want to do it. They won't allow us to do it, will they? You know, this is another thing. You know, it's like there's so many restrictions, stopping, us from going down this road of more, sustainability, because hemp is amazing. We can use hemp for so many things. We don't have to cut down the trees for paper.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of rules and laws that kind of, they prevent our ability to go out and use what's in our natural environment so much, or having land access. You know, land access is a big one.
Yeah, it's difficult with the sustainability but it's so true, just by doing that yourself, like going to farmers markets, shopping locally, doing all of this, going on your bike, walking, all these different things, you can really cut down, so much, can't you? Yourself. I mean, look at the amount of every week of the recycling and of the just the normal rubbish that every household produces. It's just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if we're thinking about packaging when we buy things, if we're thinking, okay, what's a more sustainable way of eating? What's, can I avoid buying this thing wrapped in plastic? If you can, then it's good to go towards that. But I think also there needs to be more changes from above.
Yes.
Like basically more rules in some ways about the uses of plastics and that sort of thing, because if the cheapest products are available and they're wrapped in plastic, people will buy them, unfortunately, just because of the times we're in. We're in an economic crisis, and
convenience.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're often short of time and money, and don't always know the other ways to consume. And so, I mean, the more projects like community food growing and those sorts of things, the more awareness there is about, consuming without buying loads of plastic and things is really, really important. But I also think there needs to be, just more policy around what businesses are allowed to do, because I think businesses should have restrictions, because
definitely,
we are consuming much more than we need. And I mean, businesses are also consuming much more than they need in many ways.
Yes. And also, I think especially for young people, they're losing, well, even just mothers, they're losing the art of cooking. Everything is so easy. You can phone up and you can just get everything delivered to your door. And you can go and get all these frozen foods and everything all wrapped up and everything, and they're all done. It's like people are just, they're losing the art of cooking from scratch, from having them vegetables and cooking a whole meal from scratch, which I do all the time with my four children. But I think that's really important to cook or I eat a lot of raw as well, to cook and prepare properly. Instead of eating all this ready patch processed things that are covered in plastic as they are, aren't they? Or instead of going to Iceland where it's all frozen and you just put it in the oven, which is, not very nutritious for you at all, is it? Yeah, the art of cooking.
Well, yeah, I guess this all comes back to like what we value in society and also our education. Like at the moment, maybe people are valuing their time more than they are their health because of being short on time, for instance, and therefore buying those sorts of products which save them time. Also maybe, valuing their financial freedom or their financial over sustainability, and that's maybe through need. But then it also is depends on what's available and what is affordable for people. That's a key thing. And also, as you say, education. If we're learning how to live in a kind of sustainable way in ourselves financially and time wise, and still prepare, you know, healthy, nutritious food, you know, reducing our waste, those sorts of things. They should be fundamental parts of our education. And I don't think that that is really often in the education system.
No. But this is beautiful. This is, what you're doing with the Wilder Wellbeing Workshops is very, very important. You know, it really is, because even like in other countries, they do their national service and, you know, okay, it's still in the army, but they're going out into doing treks through nature and everything and, you know, being at one with the elements and stuff like this. So I think it's very important for everyone. Doesn't matter how old you are, does it?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Like the World Wellbeing Workshops are for any age, and we're going through transitions in our life at any point, aren't we? So it could be a transition into a different season. It could be a transition from midlife to more elder in life. It could be a transition of having a baby. You know, there's all sorts of transitions that we're constantly making, and we need to hold each other in these transitions and honour them and see what the lessons are for our own growth.
Yeah, that is so important.
Nature is, of course, like a fundamental part of all of that, because we can't separate ourselves. We are nature.
Yes.
And the more we look into the mirror of it and grow alongside it, then the better.
Yeah, and listen to nature. It's so important, you know, because, the trees, they're just wise, silent, ancient, fearless beings, you know. And once you commune in that way and you open your heart and you just surrender in the moment, then, you know, you can have profound communion in that moment. Do you know what I mean? That comes through in different ways later on. And just like, you know, it's beautiful. You have to open the doorway for that communication to come in. You have to be silent, you know, and come out of the thinking time, you know. And that's where nature's really good, because she brings you into that presence, that divine presence, you know. And in there, it is that silent place where you can just sit and you can just be and you can just receive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there is so much we can receive if we quiet our minds as well. And I think Miriam would say this too. I mean, she said it took her 2 weeks when she went into the wilderness to sort of let her mind settle down enough where she could really start feeling present with things. And it does take a long time. And in Wilderness Rites of Passage work, we often use fasting as a kind of fast track to get into that sort of state. But that obviously can also be gained through time. The more time you spend out on the land on your own, the more clear you will get, because your thoughts will slow down and what is truly important and sort of animal instincts will come back.
Beautiful, because fasting is really important. I fast a lot, and it heightens your vibration, your consciousness, doesn't it? You know, to bring you into that place. Yes, yes, heightening. Beautiful, wow. And tell us where we can find and we can book your beautiful wild weekends, wild well-being weekends. And as you say, it's all seasonal, isn't it? Yeah. So
yes, we have one at the sort of threshold of every season. So there's one going into summer, one going into autumn, one going into winter, and then we'll probably be doing the same again next year. So you can find out more about it on our website, which is www.calloftheforest.co.uk. And then if you go /courses, that's the Wild Wellbeing Program. I'm also on Instagram at calloftheforest_. And if people want to get in touch with me personally, they can use my email address. It's wilderjourneysbook@gmail.com. So that's where people can find out about the workshops.
Lovely.
And if they want to find out more about Wilder Journeys, the book that Miriam and I co-edited, it's wilderjourneys.com.
And they can buy it there, can they?
Yeah, there's a link to where to buy the book.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Wow. Well, you know, I just really, really applaud you for all of your, you know, important work that you are doing in educating, teaching, sharing, and holding space for people to experience the wild nature of Mother Earth, which is the wild nature within us, because we are part of the Mother Earth. And it's time for us all, humanity, to come back to nature, isn't it? And have that connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. I just say, Laurie, thank you so much for all of your lovely wisdom and on nature. And thank you so much for being on the Great Awakening Show.
You're very welcome. It's been lovely to meet you, Joanne.
Lovely to meet you too.